Just a few days until Christmas. And I'll have to tell you, the only problem with this time of year, in my view, is that it will soon be over. But of course, I guess it's the scarcity of the supply that makes it valuable. And that's, in fact, really what gives us something to talk about today. Because with our special guest that we'll have on the program today, we're going to be talking about kind of the valuable and meaningful aspects of Christmas, those memories, those traditions that we have. And we're going to be talking with our good friend Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina, the chairman of the Freedom Caucus, and we'll be talking with Congressman Steve King of Iowa. And then we'll also be joined by Brian Kilmeade from Fox and Friends. He'll be joining us as well to talk about a new book that he has out, Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans. So great program lined up for you today as we make way for Christmas. And just let me remind you before we turn to our first guest is we're moving toward the end of the year. We're just a little bit short of where we need to be financially as an organization. And this program comes to you because of folks like you that are willing to underwrite Washington Watch and partner with the Family Research Council. And if you'd like to be a partner, all you need to do is call 800-225-4008, and any contribution you make will be doubled by a generous donor. So again, call that number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, joining us now is our good friend Congressman Mark Meadows. He represents the 11th Congressional District of North Carolina, and as I mentioned, he is the chairman of the Freedom Caucus, also serves on the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, as well as the Foreign Affairs Committee. Mark, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you, and certainly it's great to be with you with just a couple of days away from when we celebrate Christmas with our family, but it's certainly enjoyable to be with your listeners today.
Well, and the nice thing about we're coming to the end of what's been a busy week, busy first 6 months, busy year for this Congress under Donald Trump, his presidency. And I guess the good thing about this time of year is Washington is in the rearview mirror. We're all headed home for the things that we fight for each and every day. Now we get to enjoy it.
Well, we do get to enjoy it, and you're right. It's in the rearview mirror, and if we put our focus on Washington, D.C., we've missed the real focus of why we truly gather together and celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. But it's good that we're saying Merry Christmas again. We've got a president who's willing to say Merry Christmas, and I saw him in the Oval Office just a day or two ago, and he went out of his way to wish me a Merry Christmas. And I think if all of your listeners understood how committed this president is to making sure that we restore our nation back to its biblical roots, I think they would be truly amazed and certainly not only being thankful, but understanding that we've got to fight those fights each and every day.
You know what? And you mentioned the president saying Merry Christmas. I don't think people realize the significance of that. At least the media, they kind of snicker at that. They mock at that. But I was in the White House a couple of weeks ago in the Oval Office, and the president said, hey, Merry Christmas. You can say that now. And it is much more significant than just a casual greeting. It is a representation of a freedom that was almost lost, and that was to proclaim not just a holiday tiding, but a deep abiding faith in what made was a key part of making America an exceptional nation.
Well, you're right, and I think a lot of times what we do, Tony, is we think that the way our Christmas traditions have been have always been that way, and so if they're not actually guarded and that we continue to fight to put the real meaning in Christmas, they'll be forgotten. You have to look no further than the Christmas story and Charles Dickens and what was happening back in that time not too long ago, where Christmas wasn't really celebrated until that particular Christmas story was penned, and it made a big difference to people across the globe. And so hopefully This president has started to, a new tradition of making sure that we don't forget that we can once again say Merry Christmas.
Well, for the record, my preference on the Christmas story is the Muppet version. I prefer that better. But we watch that every year, actually. There's a family every year. That's one of the things we watch. We watch Christmas movies between Thanksgiving and Christmas every Friday night when we have our weekly pizza and movie. It's a Christmas movie. And speaking of that, Mark, I want to get you to share some of your Christmas traditions that your family observes.
Well,
Christmas year.
You know, it's funny. You talk about movies and things like that. We have, we have really three different ones that we typically will make sure that no Christmas celebration gets passed without watching. It's a Wonderful Life.
That's in the list,
Jimmy
too.
Jimmy Stewart.
Yep.
White Christmas is the other one with Danny Kaye and Bing Crosby,
yep.
And we always see that. And then, Home Alone is actually a newer addition to
yes.
that. And so we have all of these different traditions, but probably the biggest thing that makes a difference for us are the traditions that really are about family. I know that we wake up on Christmas morning with reading Luke 2. We do that before we open any gifts, and there's always one ornament that's a large nail that gets hung on our tree at the very bottom of the tree, but close to the trunk to remind us of the ultimate sacrifice that was given. But you know, there are so many wonderful memories. And I guess to your listeners, I would just encourage them if they've got children or small children, you know, they grow up fast, Tony.
Yeah.
I was looking at you and sending off, a loved one to the military. And I can remember when that individual was just a young boy, and now he's a young man. And so when we start to see those kinds of things, it's a big difference for all of us to not only enjoy the moment, but to make sure that we share those traditions for the generations to come.
Well, and you're almost on round two. Pretty soon you're going to have grandkids. So we're seeing these our kids grow up. And these traditions are important because they do carry on from one generation to the next. And let me, looking back as in your childhood, what was one of your favorite Christmas traditions as a family when you were a kid?
You know, I think when it was with a kid, my mom would at that point would make the most unbelievable stockings, and took such care in those stockings, Tony, that it was not just a few things in the stockings. It was little teeny gifts that were hand wrapped, and so the stocking was almost an expression of the love that she had for her children. And so you would open that stocking because it was little teeny things that were in there to say, well, I heard you when you said this was important to you. I heard you when another thing was important. And so it was those stockings that we would come down and they would be filled with just not big expensive gifts, but really tokens of the fact that that we had value. And so for me, that was a big part of it. I still remember, even as a grown up, as a grown adult, I looked forward to those stockings because it just made such a big difference.
But does Debbie still fill your stocking?
Yeah, well, she fills my stockings. Debbie does that. And I can tell you that what happens, though, and that's why I was sharing earlier, is that tradition of doing stockings now has been passed on to Debbie and I for not only our kids, but, you know, our grandkids and nieces and nephews and things like that. And so she, you know, she continues to do that. I'm a last minute shopper, and that is never a good thing. So for the others that are listening, you know, if you're listening to this and you haven't done your shopping, the minute this program's over, you better get out and do it, because you don't get credit for shopping on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, time is ticking away here. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. We're kind of bridging the week from very busy policy week, now moving toward one of the, well, my most favorite time of year, Christmas, where everything just kind of slows down for a bit before it accelerates once again. Almost out of time, Mark, but want to ask you your favorite Christmas carol or song.
You know, I think probably "Joy to the World" is mine. I've always, you know, there's so many wonderful favorites, but the joy of a Savior that indeed is born into this world, and actually came in a manger, but that's where lambs were born, and it was the lamb that was ultimately there for to be sacrificed for our sins, because you and I know that neither of us are perfect, but we do know the perfect one. And so for me, it was "Joy to the World," and we try to make sure that we do that. We always go to candlelight service on Christmas Eve. That's another part of our tradition, to sing those hymns. And even if our church is not having it, we try to make sure that we go to a church that has a candlelight service as part of our Christmas Eve, not only memories and history, but more importantly, to acknowledge in song what we experience personally.
And it is important as we keep the focus on what Christmas is truly about. Now, you've been to Bethlehem, have you not?
I have been to Bethlehem, and obviously we've been to, you know, Israel several times, but you know, when you look at it, my vision of Bethlehem before I got there was very different.
Yeah.
You know, I think we have a childlike vision of what Bethlehem is all about, and when you see it in person, it's incredibly different.
But the Church of the Nativity, where they say Jesus was born in what was the cave, the stable. One thing that was fascinating is when you have to stoop down to get in, and I
yeah.
think it, you know, to meet the Savior, you have to humble yourself, and I think that's why the shepherds came. And it's just fascinating to be there and see the humble beginnings of our Lord and Savior. And he came for those who are humble in heart, who have that childlike faith.
Well, he did. He humbled himself to not only come down and minister to us, but to save us. And I think, you know, speaking to you as a member of Congress from Washington, D.C., where everybody puts people of importance on a pedestal, there is someone no more important than truly our Heavenly Father, who didn't have to humble himself, but did, and took it all our sins on himself. And for our righteousness, we get to rise up and say thank you to a Father who has adopted us as his children. So God bless you, and Merry Christmas, my dear friend.
Merry Christmas to you, Mark. Thanks so much for joining us, and tell Debbie I said hello.
I will do. Thank you. God bless.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back right on the other side of this with Congressman Steve King of Iowa.
This Christmas season, give with purpose and meaning, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. At Family Research Council, our mission is to promote these three core values in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. We are working to ensure that our religious liberty is defended in the public square, that human life at all stages is protected, and that family values are promoted in our country's public policies. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for our future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to Family Research Council, your gift will be matched, meaning it will be doubled by a generous donor. And any donation is tax deductible. Give with purpose this Christmas season. Text FRC to 444-999. Again, that is text FRC to 444-999. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year. Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC in our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
I'll have a blue Christmas.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Merry Christmas. Yes, it's right around the corner. And you know what? It's amazing here in Washington, D.C. It's safe to say Merry Christmas again. This special program here, kind of stepping back from the policy. I know Congress is wrapping up. They'll be back right after the first of the year. But for now, we want to kind of focus on the, on getting everybody into the spirit. It's been kind of hard here in Washington. Tax reform, continuing resolutions, you know, all these things. But you know what? Congressmen are real people, too. And I have one of those real people with me, Congressman Steve King. He was elected to Congress in 2002. He represents Iowa's 4th Congressional District, and he brings personal experience, constitutional principles, traditional marriage, and family values. All of those things he brings to the forefront while representing one of the top producing agricultural districts in the nation. He serves on the Agricultural Committee as well as the House Judiciary Committee, where he sits on the Constitution and Civil Justice Subcommittee and Immigration and Border Security Committees. And he's also a great friend to have on the road when you're on a bus in Iowa in the winter. Steve King, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thanks so much, Tony. I'm happy to be on with you. And when you say that introduction, I just think of the wars we fought out on the judge bus tour around Iowa. And no one across America should doubt the resolve of this Marine, Tony Perkins, to step up in the face of all kinds of criticism and vile profanity from time to time.
We had some interesting times. We had some salty crowds out there. I thought it was a bunch of Navy guys.
It was good for us to bond, forge and bond our friendship out there in the field like that. So when we come back here to Washington, where we are today, and as we're wrapping up our time here for the Christmas break, we fight these battles in a different way, in a more genteel way, perhaps.
Right, that's right.
And we do them intellectually and faithfully.
I was thinking, as you were mentioning that, as we were talking about the bus tour, I remember we brought Louis Gohmert along with us, congressman from the 1st Congressional District of Texas, and Louis always livens up the crowd.
Well, he does for sure. I have no better friend in the United States Congress than Louis Gohmert, and he was the one that could come to Iowa and say, judges are making law here in this state. It was about the state Supreme Court that unanimously imposed same-sex marriage on the state several years before Obergefell, and Louis Gohmert is the only person I know that as a judge left the bench because he wanted to legislate.
Right.
Most judges sit on the bench and legislate from there, and Louis can say with authority, no judge should legislate from the bench. If they want to legislate, do what I did, run for Congress.
And you guys make a great team, you know, committed to the Constitution, and we so appreciate the work that you do and the values that you bring to the table. I know we work on a lot of issues, but I want to kind of step back for a moment from the issues per se and talk about two things. One, I'm going to ask you in a moment just about Christmas, kind of one of your favorite maybe family traditions, what you like to do at Christmas time. But before that, I just want to let people kind of get a better sense of Steve King. What brought you to Congress?
Well, all I really wanted to do in my earlier years was raise my family and run my business. I started a construction business in 1975, and I was watching what was going on in the state legislature and in Washington, and they kept changing the rules on me. And as business can do, we can adapt to the rules, but when they change them, it's infuriating. And I've long been engaged in the effort to strengthen the pro-life movement and later on the marriage issue. But as I was watching the state legislature, the Iowa Senate, resolve an issue of parental notification, they decided that if a minor girl was to get an abortion, that she needed to notify her parents. Well, okay, it wasn't consent. It was notification. That didn't make me happy. But when I saw the list of the definition for parents, and in that bill it had to define the parents that could be notified by a girl who wanted to get an abortion, parents, legal guardians, grandparents, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters in the whole or half blood. And I sent a fax down to my state senator that said, please support the Banks Amendment, which defines parents as parents or legal guardians only. And he called me back later in the day and said, I'm sorry, I couldn't support your request. And he couldn't defend himself. It was an issue of life or death, and he had no moral foundation to put up that vote, and he couldn't defend himself. And I said, you might as well have added family cat, family dog, and neighbor to the list of parents, because you stretch it out so long it's completely meaningless. Didn't that mean something to you? And so I went back and decided I need a new state senator. And I went to a person whom I thought would make a good state senator and began to try to convince him that I should be his campaign manager and he should be the next senator. He said, you should run, Steve. You're the one with the passion. And I said, well, Dick, I don't want to listen to you anymore. I'm going to go see Joe. He'll make a good one, too. Dick called Joe, and those two called ahead, and I went around to four or five or six, and pretty soon, I didn't know it, but they had formed a kitchen cabinet around me by calling ahead and telling them, convince Steve he should run. That's how I ended up in the state Senate and then on to Congress 6 years afterwards.
Amazing. Congressman Steve King, my guest, he represents the 4th Congressional District of Iowa, which is a key state because Iowa, first in the nation, caucuses there, and you have all of the presidential candidates, and I know they've campaigned with you. All of them come up to see you because I've been with them many times when they've been up there with you, and we've campaigned for some of the same candidates. It's fascinating to me how the life issue is so central to so many individuals like yourself and me. That's how I was a police officer and was confronted with that issue at an Operation Rescue rally. And law, I mean, my listeners know this. I've written about it in my book. But I lost my position at the police department because I was critical of the way the police department handled the pro-life protesters, beating them and abusing them, and never thought about politics. But that really launched me into my political career 25 years ago. And it's just, it's you know, I think that the left would have done themselves a great service had they solved the not created this abortion issue, but allowed it to remain at the state level instead of making this into a national issue. Steve, we're up against a break. Can you hold on?
I can.
We're going to, because I still want to get to the Christmas question. That's what we're supposed to be talking about anyway. But I find this fascinating. So we're going to take, Steve's going to stay around for the next segment. I hope you will as well. Hey, remember, till the end of the year, matching gift available. If you want to partner with us, call 866-FRC-RADIO, 866-FRC-RADIO. Everything that you commit, donate, in terms of partnering financially with FRC will be matched by a generous donor. So again, call 866-FRC-RADIO or give us a call or actually go online to TonyPerkins.com. All right, don't go away. We're coming right back after this.
Spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day by working to advance family values in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. The internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. Learn more at frc.org/internships.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Friday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, Congressman Steve King, my guest here, represents the 4th Congressional District of Iowa. We're talking about the life issue, what brought you to Congress. I was just saying how so many of our friends, Trent Franks and so many other warriors here on the Hill came here because of the life issue, Chris Smith, just so many, so many.
Going back with Joe Pitts and Henry Hyde,
yeah,
both these people that I've had the tremendous honor, the powerful honor to serve with here in this Congress, to talk some of the last days of Henry Hyde's legislative career with him sitting there in that wheelchair on the floor of the House of Representatives. It is a time that I cherish in my memory as having the privilege just to be in the same room with that man.
Yeah, I got a chance to meet him. You know, I've never thought about this, but actually I was thinking about this would be a great book in terms of the number of people who came into the political world because of the life movement. And, of course, that's not the only thing you focus on. You focus on so many other things. So in some ways, this issue that was meant for evil has been turned to be used for good in so many different ways. I mean, that sounds biblical.
It does, and I hadn't thought about it in that way. But when you want to identify people who are pro-life, along with that package comes the whole package of conservatism.
Oh, absolutely. I've talked to David Barton about that, and I recall going back, if someone is right on the life issue, almost all the time. There are exceptions, but almost all the time they're right on the other issues.
And Tony, when I was first elected to this Congress in 2002, and we set up our office in late fall of 2002, we began interviewing applicants. We had stacks of resumes 12 inches high here, and these were masters and better, another 12 inches high. Smart people with 4.0 GPAs. But I set up this standard. Everybody that comes into work in my office will meet the test, and they shall be pro-life. And the movement conservatives, they don't have to be Christians. Conservative Jews work pretty well, too, Judeo-Christian values. Mm-hmm. We've stuck with that all these years, 15 years into this, and I never have to worry about the thought process of my staff. They project our convictions out with utter clarity and consistency, and I can give them the longest of leash to go out and go to work because I know their heads and their hearts are right.
Well, I mean, it kind of goes back to we hold these truths to be self-evident, that we are created. So I think that's...
Well, then I just want to add, too, that you're close to Christmas time here as I think about this. Joy to the world, the Lord has come. We all know when Jesus was conceived, and it's biblical. And I picked up my first child, David, who's now 40, probably 42 years old, and I held him. There was an aura about that baby.
I recall.
I was completely convinced he could have been the second coming of Jesus himself. That aura so washed over me.
It is amazing. I remember my first one 25, almost 26 years ago, and it's nothing like it. It does change your perspective, no question about it. All right, before we run out of time, I want to get to the question that I called you to come in and talk about. It's Christmas time. What are some of the traditions of the King family?
Well, it's changed a little bit over the years because as our children grew up, we gave up opening gifts on Christmas morning. We do that more on Christmas Eve for all the grandchildren. So that's what flows into our house. Our house fills up and vibrates with now 7 grandchildren and 3 wonderful daughters-in-law and 3 sons whom I'm still amazed that those beautiful women so fell in love with them. But I do that to deliver them a little humility from time to time. But it is just a joyous family, and I always push to sing Christmas carols, and some want to participate. It's not completely universal in that house, but they know they're going to get to try. And I cook up a batch of oyster stew because it looks like the family likes the oyster stew I make, so I don't want to let them down. So we gather around there, and then if there's a late service, we go off to the late service. That's changed a little bit in the last couple of years, too. We have to time it. So sometimes we'll go to church Christmas Eve, maybe at a 7 o'clock or an 8 o'clock Mass instead of a midnight. But I always like the midnight Mass. That was just really special, a midnight Mass on Christmas Eve, and couple that with a sunrise service on Easter morning. Mm-hmm. Those two things are about as precious a time as you can have to have a celebration.
I can do the Easter sunrise, but I've gotten to where I can't stay up to midnight. I got to be in bed. Well, you know, it's a special time here. It's just a great time. And of course, I like it when Congress actually leaves it a little earlier. But, of course, this year coming down to the wire with a lot of
Tony, I'm thinking
business.
About a Christmas present we got about 9 or 10 years ago. Seven or so years ago was Christmas Eve from the United States Senate. They were hanging in there December 23rd.
I remember.
And I remember they had procedurally they could have delayed that vote on Obamacare till 9 o'clock that night.
In fact, I remember talking to you on the phone. I was back in Louisiana on my tractor trying to get some stuff done, and we were having conversations about Obamacare. I recall that.
And they voted on it in time to get everybody home for Christmas anyway. That was their Christmas present to us.
Well, it wasn't. That was more like sticks and coal that they left
it
us
was.
With Obamacare.
I want my freedom back. And we are moving in that direction. There's a lot to be thankful for. Hopefully this Christmas when we set the turkey out on the table, it'll be like it was last Easter when I advised my family, all standing around the table, the whole lot of them, now be prepared to eat cold ham today because I'm going to give thanks for everything we have to be thankful for. Wow. And when I finished, my 10-year-old granddaughter said, "Whatever happened to bless us, O Lord, and these I give."
Well, Steve, we got to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch after this.
Are you interested in making a real impact in public policy and culture? And are you looking for an internship experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. you will get a chance to experience our country's rich history and culture and be immersed in the most important political debates of our day. Further, you will develop the skills required to advance faith, family, and freedom in our nation. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain an invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. Learn more about the FRC internship program at frc.org/internships. Again, that is frc.org/internships.
Having a hard time finding that right gift for your family and friends? Need some ideas? Check out Family Research Council's online store and browse the latest books, mugs, trendy t-shirts, baby bibs, tote bags, and more. Your purchase of these items will support FRC in our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Some of our exclusive items include a unique in-house design DC t-shirt featuring a skyline of the monuments in our nation's capital, a cute baby bib with some pro-life flair, and a stylish tote bag with a Bible verse from 1 John 4:19 that says, "We love because He first loved us." Go to frc.org/store now to start shopping. Again, that is frc.org/store. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. Let me encourage you to check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And let me just remind you once again that between now and the end of the year, we have a supporter that is willing to match anything that you give. And we're just a little short of where we need to be. And you can help us if you'll partner with us. Again, everything you give, every dollar you give will be matched, so it'll be doubled. You give a dollar, becomes $2. You give $50, becomes $100. Give us a call. I got folks standing by, 800-225-4008. And if you call today and make a gift, I'll give you a free copy of my latest book, No Fear. All right, again, 800-225-4008, or you can do it online at TonyPerkins.com. All right, talking about Christmas, and in Mark, the Gospel of Mark, it says that Jesus, the Son of Man, did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. Jesus himself, in John chapter 15, says, "Greater love has no man than this, than to lay down his life for his friends." Recently, I had the privilege of speaking at an event with the Blue Star Mothers. Now, this is an organization that's been around since the 40s, about 75 years, I think since 1942, in which they come alongside families who have sons and daughters who are serving in our nation's military, and as well as supporting, encouraging Gold Star families. Those are families who have actually lost a son or a daughter in service of our country. And it was appropriate recently when I spoke just, I think it was last weekend, spoke to this organization at wreaths across America. It was a national day where wreaths were placed on the graves of these men and these men and women who had given their lives in service of our country. And I think it was very appropriate at Christmas time to recognize the sacrifice, because as we said, I believe that what has made Western civilization, not what I believe, it's history shows, what has made Western civilization distinct from previous history is Christianity. It changed the world. And it is that understanding that we are to serve and not be served. And what has made America a strong, prosperous nation that is looked to around the world to defend others, not as mercenaries, but as those who are willing to lay down their lives and sacrifice to others, is Christianity. And that's what we celebrate here at Christmas, the Son of God coming to earth to serve, not to be served. It's an amazing thing. I hope you will take time to celebrate that fact during Christmas. In the midst of everything else, be sure as a family that you read the Christmas story to your children, grandchildren, or just to yourself. All right. You've seen him on Fox News, but with us now is Brian Kilmeade, co-host of Fox and Friends. He's also the host of The Brian Kilmeade Show and best-selling author. His latest book, Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans. Well, when the British fought the young United States during the War of 1812, they knew that taking the mouth of the Mississippi River was the key to crippling their former colony. Capturing the city of New Orleans and stopping trade up the river sounded like a simple task. Well, New Orleans was far away from Washington, out of sight and out of mind for the politicians. With us now is Brian Kilmeade, co-host of Fox and Friends, host of The Brian Kilmeade Show, and best-selling author. His latest book, Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans. Brian, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
Now, in writing this, I just have to find, did you come down to the Crescent City to spend some time in New Orleans?
Yeah, and not only that, we came down and did an hour special, so I came back. So I came three times. The last time we came back and we got Douglas Brinkley and Ron Drez, local historians, and Douglas Brinkley, internationally known. And we came back to the actual battlefield and the key places inside in New Orleans. So it was pretty fantastic, as well as the convent.
Now, but let me just ask you, while you were there, did you get some beignets, though, at Café du Monde?
No, but I did go. I went in, but I didn't have a chance. I'm kind of like one of those guys that goes to work when I'm there. So
yeah, so you don't have time for the cultural niceties, right? Is that what you're telling me? You work too hard, right?
Well, I didn't have a time for the cultural niceties. I didn't have a tour guide telling me what to do, but I did go to the Café du Monde, and we did have a good time, but it was one of those things where I'm in and I'm out.
I see. Well, I'll send you some beignet mix so you can partake. All right.
Thank you.
Hey, let's talk about the significance of the Battle of New Orleans and how that changed history.
I mean, basically, and as you know, because you know the area so well and you're familiar with the battlefield, is that, you know, they taught us in school, and they're not necessarily wrong. Well, the Battle of New Orleans was a resounding American victory, and if we stuck with the war and we didn't have that peace treaty, we probably would have done even better because we finished so strong. Well, it turns out we found paperwork to reveal the British had no intention of leaving it after leaving New Orleans after they captured it. There was no doubt in their mind they were going to capture it. They were reinforced with about 40,000 troops after finishing off the French and Napoleon. But they ran into Andrew Jackson, and they made some real critical errors about where they tried to take the city. And it was a great leader in Jackson that was able to inspire an entire town to dig a moat, to build a berm, to enlist everybody over 15 years old that had a gun, to get Choctaw Indians, Cherokee Indians, the pirates, Tennessee riflemen, as well as Kentucky sharpshooters together. They would form one unit, even though they're outmanned 2-1. They would actually take out the British in under 45 minutes.
Yeah, well, when you have to hunt for your food, it makes you a better shot. When you're dealing in the South.
Yeah, and if you miss, you don't eat.
That's right. But also, the British kind of had a, I mean, we've seen that before, but do you think they were overconfident coming in?
No question. And why wouldn't they be? They were absolutely unencumbered as they terrorized the East Coast. They knew the northern states were not into this war, and they thought if they left it alone, they'll maybe have a chance at winning them back because they didn't want to lose their market. They were not voting for the war anyway. And they were had victory after victory, but there was something about they pushed America too far when they burned Washington to the ground, and it just changed everything. People who were ambivalent said, our entire, you know, they broke the unwritten rule. You know, they didn't burn London, they didn't burn Paris, mm-hmm. but they burned Washington. And that was it. And a lot of people, like Francis Scott Key, for an example, who was pretty much against the war, after that happened, he realized we have to make a stand or we lose the entire thing. And, you know, he would record the Battle of Baltimore. It was the beginning of America standing up for itself, turning the tide. And then it was time to call on, you know, Andrew Jackson, who's been dying to get in the war, but was one of these people that was looked at in Washington as a backwoodsman, didn't have the, you know, didn't have the temperament, didn't have the connections to get a major assignment. But he had the respect of all his men, 1,400. And then as he started reeling off victories, Secretary of War Monroe said, we're going to give this guy more and more rope. And he said, all right, go get your men. Go to New Orleans as quick as you can and to do what you can to build up your troops. And he did. And the Treaty of Ghent was signed. But that resounding victory was echoed around the world. We would never be invaded again, Tony.
My guest, Brian Kilmeade, talking about his new book, Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans. What kind of guy was Andrew Jackson?
Tough, self-made, determined, sensitive, as in thin-skinned. Mm-hmm. He was determined. You know, when you're a 13-year-old and you're an orphan, you watch your two brothers, you hear about your two brothers getting killed in war. Your mom dies during the war. You find out when a trunk of her clothes shows up on your porch. And then your dad dies before you're born, and you're in the backwoods with no formal necessary education or pathway, and you're raised by your town, your county, your country. You know, you got to learn to fend for yourself. And he was determined not to be a vagrant or a criminal, but to matter. People were going to know his name. So he was very sensitive to criticism, but he was a natural leader who, by nature, never knew how to take a backward step.
Have you seen the portraits that are on the wall of the Oval Office?
A few times, and we actually went into the Oval Office with the president. He saw Andrew Jackson. He knew a lot about him. I was telling him I was working on a book, and I guess he liked it. He retweeted it.
Well,
and we also in the special talked about how these two compare.
It's fascinating. I was in the Oval Office actually last week again. And I had a little more time, so I was just kind of noticing the portraits and the bust that were there. And there was either two or three of Andrew Jackson there in the Oval Office. And I quickly made that, not necessarily a connection with your book, but connection with the two characteristics or the characteristics of those two individuals being very similar.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that really stand out. Obviously, one's born with nothing, and one was born, you know, his dad was well off, a workaholic, gave him $1 million. We know that. Well, when they both became president, they were both very rich. When they both tried to become president, they were both dismissed. They both were considered not worthy of the office or with the, you know, with the background to achieve it. They were both looked down upon when they got it. They both had a problem with their predecessors, which is amazing thing about Jackson is his predecessors were actually the founding fathers. They actually both thought Washington lost touch with the people, and that's what Jackson ran on, and that's what Trump ran on when everyone else rejected him.
It is pretty fascinating. It's almost uncanny, the similarities between the two and the times in which they both came into office.
And probably the thing that stands out the most is they both were obsessed with unfair treatment by the media, and I found these binders of newspapers, because he got 16 newspaper subscriptions a month. And every article that he did not like, he would put either an X through or highlight areas with little notes in the columns. And he would keep them because he knew one day he was going to run across this reporter and he was going to straighten him out. Does that sound like anybody you know?
But he wasn't tweeting, was he?
He would have. Oh, my goodness. He would have. Because he ended up forming his own news agency in the White House by a reporter that he liked and respected. And that's very similar to the Twitter the president has.
Yeah, it is. It is. Brian Kilmeade, my guest, talking about his new book, Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans. Brian, where can folks get a copy of the book?
Well, I mean, if you go anywhere, you'll get it. And also, BrianKilmeade.com is a place to get it personalized.
Yeah, you can see it everywhere. I've seen it in airports all across the country. Everywhere I go, I see the book. I hope it's doing well. I mean, you're number three, right, on the New York Times bestseller?
Yeah, I mean, it's number three, but when you have Walter Isaacson and Ron Chernow, it's tough to be number one.
Well, I tell you what, number three is pretty good, and it's probably, yeah. I think, as people read more of it, it's going to spread more and climb up that that list. It's a great gift for Christmas as well. Speaking of Christmas, before we run out of time, let me switch gears just a little bit away from the book and more to the Christmas as we reflect upon that, getting close. What does Christmas mean to Brian Kilmeade?
I mean, it's a time to reflect. It's definitely a time for family. It's time to be grateful for what you have. But in my case, on a book tour, it is realizing you have 5 days to shop for a lot of people.
That's why
really
I,
quickly.
That's why online. I shop online.
I'm still a guy that's got to go out there. Oh. I kind of like the feeling on Christmas.
No.
You know,
me.
I think things are a lot more settled this year than last year, believe it or not. And I think that, you know, the country's feeling good. The confidence is up. The president feels like he's got an accomplishment. I think that, you know, maybe things are going to start calming down for everybody. I don't know if we could keep up this pace, Tony.
Well, let me ask you, continuing to talk about Christmas, any Christmas traditions that the Kilmeades like?
The traditions are, I mean, pretty much the same. We always go to my mom's house, and we always go now with the grandchildren. Now the children are not really children. I think the youngest one's now in ninth grade as opposed to 9 months.
Yeah.
And everyone, no matter where you are, we always get together, and we host Christmas Eve. So now we have everyone coming over Christmas Eve. In fact, even when our house got flooded and everything got damaged, we still wanted to have it, and it was one of the most famous Christmas Eves ever. We're on the actual slab. Our walls are cut off 3 feet high because they got to be replaced. And we're all on stack tables. And we used those flood lamps. And we still talk about that because we had to continue that tradition of always having Christmas Eve at our house, even if there was 3.5 feet of water because of Sandy.
Yeah. We had something similar last year. We had we were living in the RV after the flood hit us, and so we had our Christmas tree on our back porch, lights
That's
and all.
That's awesome.
And it does cause you to stop and focus on the things that are most important. Relationships with your family, and obviously relationships with God as we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. Brian, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for taking time to visit with us this afternoon. And we're going to encourage people to rush out and get a stocking stuffer, Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans. Brian, thanks so much for being with us.
I look forward to seeing you soon, Tony. Thanks for everything.
All right. Take care. Brian Kilmeade, co-host of Fox and Friends. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Andrew Jackson and the Miracle of New Orleans. Fascinating. He's written several good books on history, and I love history. Well, folks, as we wrap up our time together, let me again remind you of the opportunity you have to partner with the Family Research Council. We are grateful for those of you who have made that commitment to partner with us to make sure that Washington Watch Radio continues as it is supported strictly by folks like you across the country. And again, if you'd like to be a part of that, give us a call, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. We have folks standing by to take your call. And if you make a pledge, a commitment today, we'll give you a free copy of my book, No Fear. Well, let me wish you a very Merry Christmas. Thanks so much for being with us. And I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.